Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers.
I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Welcome back to another episode of ABA Mom. I'm Allie, your host, a board-certified behavior analyst and a proud mom of five.
And I'm Erica, registered behavioral tech and a student analyst, and I'm also a mom of two. And today we're diving into a crucial topic that impacts the quality of care we provide, the dreaded competency assessment for RBTs. That's how I feel. I just renewed mine.
That's right. Competency assessments are essential for ensuring that RBTs are not only knowledgeable, but also able to apply the knowledge effectively in real-world situations.
Yep, exactly. We all know that the field of ABA is constantly evolving. It's vital. And the board requires for RBTs to engage in regular assessments and maintain and enhance their skills.
So let's start with what exactly is a competency assessment for RBTs?
So a competency assessment is a systematic evaluation of the RBT skills and knowledge in different areas in ABA. It typically involves direct observation, interview, and role play.
And it's not just a one-time thing. You need competency assessments before you become an RBT and a year to renew your RBT certification. So you need it each and every year.
And I think they are changing it, if I'm correct, in 2026, I think at the beginning of the year. From what I hear, it's going to be every 2 years. And I think it's going to involve CEUs. So
yeah,
the role of supervising BCBA comes... So where does the role supervising a BCBA comes in? They play. So the role of a supervising BCBA comes in here. They play a crucial role in conducting these assessments and providing different ways and timely feedback to the RBTs.
Yes. And also just to piggyback what you were saying as far as the CEUs and that every 2 years, the board is going to be making those changes. And that's very similar to what a BCABA does and a BCBA. So it's an every 2 year cycle. So they're just kind of putting RBTs on that every 2 year cycle, including CEUs. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some key areas that are included in competency assessment for RBTs. So measurement assessment, skill acquisition, behavior reduction, and professionalism requirements.
Yep. And I know the first time I was assessed, you know, so surprising. I was a nervous wreck. My experience in ABA at the time was just pretty much being a mom and, you know, the way I was parenting. I have a background in psychology and, you know, graduated in 2012. I don't want to say that out loud. That was a long time ago. Some concepts sounded familiar. But, you know, in psych, we focus more on like Freud and those people and not so much of the people important in ABA. But it was still very overwhelming, even though I had those concepts kind of locked in the back of my brain.
Yeah, and I think that definitely helps too. I also, my bachelor's, my undergrad was in psychology too, which actually I find a lot of people in our field are.
Yeah.
For psychology.
That or social work.
Majors. Yeah, or social work, right? And I know one thing that just really helped me, I am very visual, so... I prepared as like a visual learner and I just found all these like visuals online. And so with RBTs that struggle, especially with their initial assessment, those have been seasoned RBTs a long time. I find that they don't need as much, but also it's one way to help them get prepared not only for the competency exam, but also for the RBT exam is to use some of those visuals. So I also recommend reviewing the task list. And you can find it on the board website. And most of the assessments are things that you're already doing with your client without kind of realizing that you're doing them.
Yeah. And now, of course, now that I'm almost done with school, they came out with like the sixth edition task list. Right. So what helped me was making my own competency assessment note because I'm so extra and it's about 5-6 pages long. And that's just my thing. You just kind of do whatever works for you. And it's funny because the current company, I told admin about this and now he hands this out to incoming RBTs that, you know, want to sit for their test and do their comp assessments and stuff. So it's pretty cool that like, apparently I kind of know what I'm doing having these notes. I liked watching different YouTube channels. I'm just a nervous wreck when I know I have a test coming up. So just study the way that works best for you. Give yourself a few weeks before you actually sit for your exam. If possible, try your best. I always say this to myself. I'll study in chunks. It never happens. But it's a good method. Study a little bit every day if you can.
Yeah. I'm kind of like a pedal to the metal person too. Like I like to do it all kind of at once and then just review like a little bit of like, ooh, I don't think I know this as well and kind of going mm-hmm. over those concepts. Yeah. But that's a great suggestion. From my experience, RETs, it was becoming RETs, usually do pretty well with ethics, professionalism. And seem to struggle mostly with discontinuous measurement.
And so can we break down for everybody what we need to know exactly for the comp assessment and kind of go over each section for our learners or listeners?
Yes, we can do that. Okay, so one thing that I mentioned was that continuous and discontinuous measurement. So Erica, I'm just going to, let's go ahead and just kind of go over some of this. Also, I just want to address that as far as the assessment, I do want to say that for those of you becoming RBT, thinking about becoming RBT, that the assessment is not the same thing as the test. You have to have the assessment before you take the test. So that's by your BCBA is going to do your assessment with you. And it's usually while you're with your clients, because there's some level that we need to see you with your client. And then some of these things you already do with your clients. We don't need to stress quite as much if you're already doing it with your client. And some of it you might be interviewed or go over and do role playing with. The first one is continuous measurement. Implementing continuous measurement. Erica, can you give me an example of measurement that is continuous?
Yeah, it could just be something as simple as frequency. I'm on the spot now. I have no examples. So if let's say you're, you know what? Actually, I took it yesterday for my own child. She's been having a little sassy attitude. So every time she argued with me or yelled at me, I took data on that pretty much. And I did my own little like ABC data to see what triggered it and what the consequence was. I literally have a whole Word document. We filled up a whole page yesterday. Good times. But yeah, so taking frequency would just be like counting every instance of behavior.
So frequency is just the account. So like the amount of times. So every time your daughter yelled at you, so you're just counting the amount of times that she did it. So however time you're measuring. So if it's, you know, she yelled at you 5 times yesterday or 10 times or whatever it may be. So frequency is really just a count the amount of times that something occurred. There's also duration, which is the length of time. So we said the amount of times, so the amount of times that you can count. And then duration is the length of time. So how long something occurs. So this, it can be used different ways. I've used this sometimes with like tantrum behavior, if like the tantrums are very long. So it's how long the tantrum versus frequency. So not how many times the tantrum occurs. So not did it happen 1 time, did it happen 2 times, did it happen 3 times. This instead is it occurred 5 minutes, it occurred 10 minutes, it occurred 20 minutes, it occurred an hour and a half. So just kind of depends on the length. Do you want to explain latency?
If I'm correct, I know I'm so bad at putting it in definition terms, but so it's pretty much the time between, and for the competency assessment, if you want to sound smart, you can say SD, but it's the discriminative stimulus. Can't even say the word. So pretty much like the time it takes for you to say, let's say, you know, you have some cards out, like find the apple, the time between that demand and the client responding. Am I right?
Exactly. My 17-year-old, like I might say, hey, guess what? It's time to take out the trash. And then the latency sometimes between the time he actually takes out the trash, the time I ask him to take out the trash could be like, you know, 20 minutes. It can be 2 hours, right? So the latency is by the time you ask and then the time it occurs. But you're right about the SD. So the SD would be me asking. And then, so me saying, so the SD is take out the trash. And then how long it takes him to actually take out the trash. So, but you're absolutely right on that one. Okay, so let's talk about discontinuous measurement.
So with discontinuous, that one we have whole interval, partial interval, and momentary time sampling. So with whole interval, it's pretty much if the client performs the activity the entire time. And then partial, we have if it only happens once during that specific interval. And by interval, I mean if, let's say, you're checking for that behavior every 2 minutes or so. So it only happens once in those 2 minutes. And then momentary time sampling at the end of each interval time if the behavior is happening. So let's say you're trying to track tantrums or property destruction. At the end of the 2 minutes, you're checking or whatever time you set. And if they're performing in that behavior, then you put a little check if you're tracking it.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. That's discontinuous measurement. You're right. So it does, there's the partial, whole interval, and the momentary time sampling. I would say overall, this isn't a measurement that I think we typically use a whole lot in our field. There was a company I worked for that really liked to use this for target behaviors. And basically, it was a sheet that used partial interval, and it was either yes or no, like the behavior occurred. So every 15 minutes, did the behavior occur, yes or no? So if it occurred at all. So that's not the entire 15 minutes, but it occurred at all in 15 minutes, like yes or no. So did a tantrum occur in 15 minutes between 1 o'clock to 1:15? No. Did it occur between 1:15 to 1:30? Yes. Like one, at least one time it occurred. The whole interval will be like the whole 15 minutes. So did it occur from 1 to 1:15 the whole time? And then also the momentary time sampling. The best way that this was explained to me was a teacher like kind of like working like on the chalkboard, like turning around and saying, okay, like did Johnny hit Jimmy? No. Okay. Right? So only kind of in the moment, like when we're observing it. But I think, Erica, you explained that really well too. I find that this one seems to be like one that RBTs tend to struggle with, because I don't think that we really, in my experience, use a ton of discontinuous measurement, really, like in real life and the field. Like it's really kind of a hard way with a lot of our ABA software to track discontinuous measurement. And I think it's something that could be easily skewed. So we use a lot more continuous measurement. Another thing you'll find on the checklist too is like the data and graphs. And so just making sure like you're something that you probably will be doing with your client is entering data and like going over graphs with your behavior analyst. Preference assessments. Do you want to talk about preference assessments, Erica?
This is where I got caught up at my last. Thank God for my supervisor giving me grace. So this is how we see potential reinforcers. And so I know them, but like it's something about the act. Like when you like saying FO, I completely forgot free operant. That's what it was. And I had the letters in my head, but couldn't think of anything.
Yeah.
But so free operant is unrestricted access to the items and activity. And we kind of just observe. So like, let's say you go to the toy store or something and you kind of tell your kid like, okay, go pick a toy. And so they kind of go through the aisle, see what their preferred is. And then single stimulus is just one item presented at a time. And then you just kind of observe their reaction. Paired stimulus is kind of a forced choice where two items are presented at the same time and they pick between those two. I like multiple stimulus. I like a lot of options. So giving three or more different options presented at the same time, I think it's a quicker method. So they have two. This is where I got caught up. So multiple stimulus without replacement is the chosen.
I just got some markers ready too, because this one I think a lot of people get tripped up on too. But
yeah. So without replacement is the chosen item is removed from the array. So you kind of just move it around and just kind of, I don't know how to explain it. You have four items, and then let's say they pick the rubber duck. Now you kind of move things around. Now they have three items, and you just put it in order. Okay, rubber duck was first, Mickey Mouse was second, rainbow was third, whatever. However they picked it, you put it in that order. And then multiple stimulus with replacement is the items chosen, and they stay in an array for the next set. I feel like that's so complicated how I explained it.
I feel like we could break it down even further. But
yes,
I like what you're saying, because what you're saying is true. That's exactly what you do. So you like take something out, like you're kind of like, okay, so rubber duck. So next time, like, we don't have rubber duck, we have like these items instead. So I'm just going to do like a quick example. So I just have these highlighters. Typically, like, it's different items, so they wouldn't always be highlighters, but just for example purposes. So I have all of the items here. So there's four items. Okay. The first kit. So if I say like, whatever your SD might be, but I could say like, which one? Or like, pick one. Okay. So they pick the orange one. All right. So without replacement, I'm not replacing it. So there's no more orange one. So I'm marking out that was the highest one. The orange one is no longer coming back. Now I could put another item in. So I could say, okay, like something else, right? To have another item. But an orange marker is out. But if I am going to add, like, I'm going to just go ahead and replace it. So I'm putting orange marker back. Okay, so I could even put it in a different order too. So maybe even put orange marker back here. So this is with replacement. So now I'm replacing the orange marker. As far as the RBT exam, it's been a long time. I don't know that that is a which type of preference assessment. I think maybe that might be like a couple of questions. Like, what do you think, Erica?
I don't remember. I've blocked that day out from myself. I'm being honest. I made it through. That's all I cared about.
Yeah. So honestly, the preference assessment, so you could also just be conducting a preference assessment. More than likely, your preference assessment is probably just a free operant. So things that you see that your kid likes in an environment, it's like, oh, I always see them with this orange marker all the time. They're always picking it up. They're always using the orange marker, right? It's just something in their environment that you see them use a lot. So I know that, you know, one of my kids really likes bubbles. That's because they have bubbles at home and they pick it up and they're always blowing bubbles. So sometimes just things in our environment, and that's part of that free operant too. So yes, with replacement, without replacement, I think that does stress out a lot of RBTs or upcoming RBTs, but it is not stressful. It's just, are you replacing the item to go back into the array, or are you not replacing the item to go back in the array? All right, so ABC data collection. So Erica, you mentioned that briefly. Can you kind of just give an example of like what ABC is?
So I'll just say the words. So A is for antecedent, B is for behavior, and C, consequence. So first, and I feel like if you ever message a supervisor like, hey, this kiddo's having this behavior, most of the time they will be like, what's the ABC data? So just make sure you really pay attention to what happened before the behavior. So antecedent is the moments right before the behavior that we're tracking occurs or that we observe. And then behavior is anything that that person does. And the consequence is whatever reinforcement, extinction, or punishment that comes after that behavior.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Antecedent. Always the A, what comes before. B is the actual behavior occurring, and C is the consequence. So the consequence can be anything. It doesn't have to be negative or positive. It's just whatever is coming after the behavior. So I think that was explained very well. So you might hear that too. It's just like, okay, especially when a new behavior occurs, it's like, okay, so what was the ABC for that? And it helps also find out the function for that behavior, assumed function. Discrete trial training. So kind of like the difference between a discrete trial training and naturalistic teaching is discrete trial training a lot of times is something that you can do at a table, right? So it's like different teaching procedures. So usually like some clinics might even refer to this as like a table time. So it's any of those things, like maybe I have like different cards. So where are my cards? Oh, I must have moved them. So like if I have different cards, like I might say like match or find, like which one is an animal, something like that, where I'm doing like match a sample or I'm having them choose like a category. All of those things are discrete trial training. Naturalistic environment is anything out in the natural environment that's also teaching a skill. So it could be, you know, maybe I'm working on tacting. So I'm saying, okay, what kind of animal did you see? Right. So maybe they're working on cats. So they see a cat. It's like, oh, what do you see? Cat. Right? Versus like sitting down at a desk and showing a card of a cat. Erica, do you want to add anything to that? Okay. What about chaining? Do you want to talk about chaining?
Yes.
Okay.
That's another one that I always kind of forget the last one. So, because it doesn't say chaining in it. So there's forward chaining, backward chaining, and then total task, which sometimes we just refer to as TA. So forward chaining is they do the task first, and then we support the following steps. So let's say washing hands. They will turn the sink on, and then we help them get the soap, rub their hands, dry their hands, all that. Backward chaining is they need support on all steps, and then they do the last. So let's say we support all the steps, and then they throw the paper towel out independently, and then we just build on that. And then total task is the total task is taught, and you give support wherever they have challenging steps. Like any, let's say they need help with turning the sink on and off, and they independently can do all the other bathroom steps.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Backwards is doing that last step for total task is like the whole thing. They're doing the whole thing. And what was the other one? My brain just forward chaining is that first step too. So yeah. And you kind of a good way to determine this is what steps that your client is struggling with. So like, so how successful are they at the first step? If they have the first step pretty down or mostly down, maybe you're starting with forward chaining. If it's backwards, they got that last step, you're working on tying shoes, and they got that last part where they kind of do that knot at the end, maybe that's where you start to kind of start where they're at. If you're like, okay, they have some of these steps, and I think that they could probably do a total task, and then you'll do like a total task. And what was next? Oh, shaping. All right. Shaping behavior. I think that does, shaping behavior goes a lot with chaining. So what do you want to, you want to address shaping, Erica?
Kind of not explain it. The only way is like by like kind of definition, just giving, we accept whatever approximation and then just gradually change it. So the only thing that comes to mind, and I don't know if I'm wrong, but let's say, I don't know, let's say I'm just looking at my paper and I just saw the word assessment. So let's say the kid will say, and I'm like, okay, assess. And then they can build on that word. And then eventually with time, they can say assessment. It's a bad example, but
no, that's not a bad example. That's a good example. And that I like is when we're shaping behavior, kind of knowing what the prerequisites are. So whatever they can do kind of before. So, you know, that does go along with like a lot of what you're saying with like the assessment, right? So like they can say like the part of the word, or they can spell part of a word, but they can't spell the whole word yet. So you can even do it. So like for you have a client that doesn't have a lot of vocal communication, but they can do like a approximation of a word. So maybe you're starting with wah instead of water. So we're saying wah, and then we keep building on wah, and then eventually we'll get wat, and then we'll get water. The goal is to have the whole word, right? Or maybe they can say words, but they aren't using whole sentences. So if they want something, they can say cookie. And then we'll work on want cookie. And then it will be, I want cookie. So we're slowly building to that point based on what their skills are. The next one is discrimination training. So implementation discrimination trainings. Erica, do you want to talk about discrimination training?
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
So fun.
So with that,
discrimination training.
We teach, you should have done my comp assessment this year. So we teach next the time. Client a skill that can be applied across any target in any environment. So for example, if a child says daddy when they see their father, and they don't apply that label to men, just to dad, just to that specific. I know in school they mention it with dogs, like anything on four legs would be a dog, but like technically is a cow a dog? No. Is a cat a dog? No. So it's like, I don't know how to build on that.
No, you're exactly right. So there's like overgeneralization, like what you're talking about. So it's like everything with four legs, a dog has four legs. So everything with four legs has to be a dog. So that's overgeneralizing versus the discrimination where you're going to say, okay, this is a dog, right? This black and white is a dog and it's not a cow.
Yes.
Right? So, or like, I like how you said for dad too. So not all men are dads, but there's one man that is, I mean, assuming, right? I mean, who knows? They could be more than one man, but assuming you have one dad, so one man is dad, so this is dad, or this one woman is mom. So you're able to discriminate that this one person is a specific title. So that's discrimination training, being able to discriminate between different items. So some of that, you kind of, the flip side of that is you want to generalize things. So like we could say toilets. So this is a toilet at our house, but this is a toilet at the store at Publix. This is a toilet at school. So, but these are all toilets. These are all places you can go to the bathroom. So there's really kind of two sides to that. So the one is we want to discriminate and make sure that we're able to kind of break it down to say that this is like a specific person or a specific thing that kind of goes in this category, or that this is one specific thing goes in multiple categories. Stimulus control transfer. You want to talk about stimulus control? I think you, Erica, you do really good with stimulus control with your clients.
Do I?
Yeah. You're good at redirecting. You're like, oh, come on back here. You do a good job. No, but you do really, I've seen you do a really good job redirecting your clients.
Yay. So the definition I just put on my little notes was prompts are discontinued once the target behavior is displayed in the presence of the SD. So that's what I put. Give me an example.
I like it. That's short and simple, right? So you want to kind of gain control. So like usually, like especially with like a new skill, like we want to have like very prompt heavy, but then slowly kind of fade out those prompts, right? So we're getting more control. It's also kind of just having them, like you kind of pair as like the stimulus too. So that also helps you with some of that stimulus control, right? So being able to give a demand, right? So now you're like, okay, so like we're going to move on to this activity, right? And it starts becoming kind of flawless. So I really like that too, that you're kind of just removing things away for the SD. Love it. Prompting. So that those go together as well. Prompting. So there's different prompts. There's a prompt hierarchy. Full physical prompt. There's where it's like hand over hand. There's gestural prompts. Or actually, let's go back to, there's full physical prompt, partial physical prompting. Let me know if I forget any, Erica.
Is there light
gestural
physical
prompting?
Is there light physical?
So is it? I think it's partial physical. I guess you can't.
I haven't looked at the hierarchy in so long.
So you can. Yeah. So you can do like a full physical, like a partial physical, and like you could do like a light, like a tap or something. So it could even be lighter.
Yeah, I usually like, that's why I kind of forget them all, because I usually do verbal, gestural, or like a light, like right at the elbow, like if they need to write.
I never consider that partial. But it is lighter, you're right, because partial could be like part of your arm versus like a tap like on the arm. So that does look different. There's verbal, so like for full verbal, so it's like, you know, I could do like a full physical where I'm helping you pick up your pen, a partial physical, right? So I'm kind of guiding your arm to pick up your pen, a verbal, so where I say, pick up your pen, a gestural, where I'm pointing to the pen for you to pick up. What am I forgetting? I guess it could be partial verbal. So you could always get into the partials too. So you could say partial verbal, like, you know, and then also like your original SD could be like, what do you need? Like, right? So like, oh, I need my pen to write with. So there's different prompts in the hierarchy. And I would say like the prompt level that you use is where they are with that skill and what skill set, what you need to teach them with. Usually use like a more intrusive prompt for new skills, and then you start to fade off the prompts once they've kind of learned that skill. So full physical, partial physical, light, I guess that's one too. Let me see if light is light while we're having this conversation. I don't have to come back and edit. Yay. So I have full physical, partial, and then full verbal prompt. So I guess it's not really light, but I guess it's just a partial. You're just using a partial, but I would say it does probably look different for different situations. So I guess it would be more in like the description of like when you use a partial physical, like you're just tapping them versus, you know, moving their hand, like errorless learning. Okay. Anyway, sidebar.
Yeah.
So the prompt level really just depends on the client's need and how well that they know the skill. Some clients, full physical prompting is very aversive too. So there's some clients I wouldn't even use a full physical prompt with. Sometimes I might just like need a verbal prompt or like a partial verbal prompt. So it really just depends on where they are. Sometimes they only need like a gestural prompt. And, you know, we're just working on like the SD and then we're just going to fade out and they're just going to know like, okay, like let me look at all my materials independently. I went and got a pen or a marker. This is a marker. Highlighter. Token systems. Erica, you love tokens.
My favorite. So, okay. I totally pulled it up on my phone because there was a kiddo that we had when you first started with me that I forgot my token board, as she was really reinforced by just like picking her token she got to use that day. I don't have it with me, but they sell like a 50 pack on Amazon for really cheap. So it's a board and it's got, let's say, I don't know, think of a name. Let's use Noah because you said Noah before. So let's say Noah needs 5 stars to get on his iPad. So he needs to do 5 tasks or whatever you're trying to do, 5 trials. And then if he gets all 5 stars, then he gets X amount of time on the iPad.
Right.
Or whatever program he wants. And so I will say there's so many apps. There's one, I think it was called like Easy Token, where it's, I don't know if you can see it.
I love that.
That's supposed to be a little laptop. I don't know who has a laptop that's a child now, but yeah. And so like you get to even customize like whatever. Oh, geez. I don't know if you can see it. Like they have ladybugs, smiley faces. They have ladybugs, smiley faces. You could pick the amount of tokens you want. You can even pick what they want to earn. And then let me see. I think it even lets you, yeah, you can even add whatever photo you want. So that's what I used to do. I used to put her notebook in the photo and I'd be like, hey, we have to do X, Y, and Z before we can do the first Dan thing. We got to do this stuff and then we can earn drawing time together. And it works. And it works with my kids too. I just don't follow through. That's my problem.
That's I get the tired. Hardest part of being a parent. And I think,
yeah,
like, just it, just the follow through is hard. I mean, I know it's like,
and we have one so many parts, but we have hard. So many systems and ideas because we're in this field, and then you try to implement that. You try to do the first then board. You try to do a chore board. You do all these things. You have 1,000 different reinforcements, and then the kids are burnt out, and then I'm really burnt out. So then we just don't do anything. It's great. But token systems, I feel like, have always been so amazing. My kids like to clean the house and do – well, they don't like to. Let me correct that. They do it for a nickel.
But they like to earn the token.
Yes, absolutely. And so, like, I don't have a physical board anymore for them. I just tell them, like, hey, at the end of the day, we're going to, like, look at your chore list and whatever you've done that I've seen anyway, because they like to check random things off. Then you get 5 cents or 10 cents per chore you did. I give them at most like $20 a month. Okay. I don't have a ton of money, but I think it's great because when I was doing it. Yeah. And then I will say I kind of stopped around December, and it's like, I get stressed because now I'm doing a lot of chores and I get upset with them, but they want their money, you know? So I have to go back to doing that method, but tokens work. Reinforcement works.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. I love it. And I like how you showed that too on your phone. I'm going to have to get that app. But yeah, essentially a token economy of any kind is like you're earning tokens. So it could be an actual token. It could be like a stickers. It could be all kinds of different things. It could be like you could do like a whole token economy, like where maybe you earn like bucks for like a, maybe you have like a school store set up or like something at home set up like that.
I will say,
so token systems client, are great. Yeah.
Yeah. If an analyst recommends having a token board, it's for a reason. So if you, because I'm that person, I forget my token board a decent amount. So now I have an extra one in the car, but I have it on my phone. And worst case scenario, some kiddos can care less. They'll, if you just draw it on a piece of paper, and I'll tell them, like, hey, what token do you want?
Too. Yep.
And so, like, then I'll just do smiley faces. It's better than no token.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. Like, and honestly, they're fine usually with that because it's better than not having one. And then, you know, kind of giving that concept of like you're going to have something to earn. Let's say like your goal is, okay, so 5 tokens, right? And then you're going to earn what? Like you have a specific thing that they're going to earn. So 5 tokens to earn your tablet, for example, is a great one to work on. And then some clients don't necessarily need token systems. It kind of just depends on the client. Always. Like only adding things kind of in as you need them and taking things out as you kind of fade out, just kind of like our prompts, like we add things in as we need it and then we start to fade it out as we no longer need it. Another thing that you're going to have on your checklist is the crisis and emergency. So just kind of knowing what to do in a crisis. It's going to vary depending on your client's emergency. So some companies do like restraint procedure. Some companies do not do that. It is a huge liability also. And so, you know, also if there is like an emergency, if it's like a medical emergency or if it's like a behavior crisis, obviously, like a lot of times, like, you know, working with like younger kids, you're going to have an adult present too. Obviously notify the adult present, notify your supervisor, call 911, especially if it's like a medical emergency, you know, so I would just kind of like what you would do in other emergencies, right? Like notify everyone. And I would say definitely if it's a crisis where somebody could get hurt, you could get hurt. It's pretty an intense crisis. 911 would be appropriate for an emergency. So, and also contacting your supervisor, right? Like we want to definitely let our supervisor know what's going on. And, you know, that's kind of a situational thing, kind of what your client's needs are, how intense the behaviors are. Maybe they have like medical emergencies. Maybe they have like frequent seizures and something like that. So that would be a different time to call for medical, seek medical attention. Demonstrate also antecedent interventions. Analysts might ask you to do one of these. Antecedent interventions, differential reinforcement or extinction. Antecedent interventions. So that's anything we talked about antecedent. So anything that happens before a behavior, so we can kind of change things, our environment before a behavior occurs. So any like things you can do to be proactive. So for example, maybe you set up some motivations for them. So maybe it is a token board or something like that. So setting up some antecedent manipulation. So you're setting up for success. Differential reinforcement. So there's DRA, DRO, DRI. So differential reinforcement. So essentially we want to have our clients on a reinforcement schedule. And so do you want to go over DRA? Do you remember all those, Erica?
I know those, it's just so many. So, okay. Yeah. So DRA is.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Differential reinforcement. And the A is of alternative behavior. So essentially withholding reinforcement for inappropriate behavior and reinforcing the appropriate, which I feel like as a parent, sometimes you do the opposite, but this one actually works. So for example, if a child's hungry, a parent ignores the demand and – wait, hold on. Sorry. I don't know what I wrote there. Okay. So if your child's hungry and you ignore, you know, if they're throwing a tantrum because they're hungry and then you wait for them to ask appropriately, like, hey, can I have a banana? Sure, you can have a banana. Good job for asking. And then reinforcing that with the banana and, you know, verbal praise.
Right.
And then DRI – you should have saw me a couple semesters ago in my class when we were going over this. It's just, there's so many. So DRI is differential reinforcement.
It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, of incompatible behavior. So when a child engages in inappropriate and appropriate behavior at the same time. So a kid needs to remain in their seat. Anytime the child leaves the seat, they're ignored. When the child remains in their seat, teacher rewards them. And then
right. DRI. And it has to be incompatible. Like it can't. You can't be doing, you can't stand and sit at the same time.
Yeah. And then DRO, I feel like DRO we probably use the most in ABA, right?
I feel like DRA and DRO are often pretty similar. So DRO is just any other behavior. So DRA is like a specific like behavior. So like whatever the alternative. So I'm only going to give you this banana like if you ask for it. Right. So when you ask for it, then you can have your reinforcer. You can have your banana. But a DRO is any other behavior. So if I'm looking for somebody not to engage in self-injurious behavior, so they keep hitting their head. So anything else they do, like they clap their hands or they jump up and down or whatever else they're doing, it's like, oh, or you're sitting like, oh, I like how you're sitting. I like how you're doing this. Yeah. I like so anything but hitting themselves. So anything else. I mean, that's appropriate. We don't want to reinforce like now I'm biting my finger. So any other behavior that is not like a target behavior, right? That's self-injurious.
Yeah. And then the next one is DRL, which that one's differential reinforcement of low rates. So when they engage in a behavior that isn't appropriate, but frequency is an issue. If a child wants to wash their hands multiple times, that child washes their hands only once before lunch and then gets reinforced by being first in the lunch line. So then,
right.
Yeah. And then DRH is the last one. Thank God. So that's differential reinforcement of high rates or response rates. Reinforcement after several responses occurs, after they occur, or above pre-established rate. I don't know why I wrote my definition so crazy. But an example of that is if a child doesn't get up for school independently all weekdays, set a small goal of getting up without help maybe twice a week instead of 5 days a week, and gradually increase when they're successful on those 2 days.
Right. Absolutely. So another thing.
Sorry.
Yes, extinction. No, go for it. Extinction.
That was the last thing before I forget, because I forgot that's all lumped together.
So go ahead. Yeah. And then the other thing is we'll go over those really quickly, too.
Yeah.
Okay. So, extinction. So
that's a reinforced behavior that's no longer reinforced. That's all.
Yeah. So it's no longer reinforced. So and then I feel like we probably need to do a whole episode on extinction. And there's a lot of things that go into it. But basically, you're no longer reinforcing those behaviors. So instead of for example, you have a kid that gets up in the middle of the night, right? And you're like, oh, here's a glass of water, right? Here's a glass of water. Here's a glass of water. And now you no longer give that glass of water. You're putting them on extinction. So you're no longer providing that reinforcer for them to get up in the middle of the night. So session notes, those are something that you will probably be doing in session with your supervisor, with your client. Client dignity. Do you want to give an example of client dignity?
Well, first off, follow ethics and don't talk to other people about the client when they're not connected.
That's true.
That's a big one. And yeah, just remember these kiddos, they might have their struggles and challenges, but they, you want them to be respected just as your own children, or how you would want to be respected in session. And just make sure, let's say you're out at Publix and you see your client, don't tell people that that's your client, because you want... that's having respect for them. I don't know how to explain it, but
it is. And it's also consideration for HIPAA too, right? So if you were you were a doctor and they were your patient, you wouldn't go oh my gosh, hey, it's great to see you. How is your head feeling? Or,
How's your gout?
How's your behavior? Okay? How are you doing? Yeah. So, it does provide that respect to your client and the family. Now, if a client comes up to you and says, oh, hey, Miss Erica, Miss Allie, you can say hello, obviously, but we don't want to kind of initiate that or tell other people that this is my client. That's definitely respecting dignity. Another thing too, I want to add to that is if a client is undressing, things like that, because I've had a couple clients disrobe, or if they're going to the bathroom or something like that, you're working on toileting, kind of keep them as covered as possible. Also we don't want to just kind of leave them that way. I'm just kind of providing them as much dignity in that regard too. Professional boundaries. Erica, do you want to touch on professional boundaries?
Yes. So just make sure to have constant communication with your supervisor, the parent, anybody connected with the case. Let's say if the client, I don't even need to give an example, but just have constant communication within the case. Make sure that you don't, refrain from dual relationship with the parents. I know in the workplace, we think dual relationships is one way, but it's just in ABA, we have to make sure to, it's a fine line, especially when you have your own kiddos that have special needs, but you have to make sure that they always see you as a provider and not a best friend. What else? Keep conversations about the learner and about the sessions and programs. Don't add clients on social media, or anybody associated with that client. Don't add them on social media, which I feel like it's happening more and more now, but you really have to keep that fine line. And then make sure gifts too. I feel like the BACB, when I first started, it was no gifts at all. And gifts meaning even a cup of coffee. But I think the board is a little bit more lax now. And I believe, if I'm right, it's a $10
Yeah, maximum. You can accept
something like that.
10. But even then, I don't really accept. I think the dilemma too is it's cultural too. You accept, my gift because my culture. And I think that's really where it kind of came into play. And also $10 is not a large amount.
I know there was an article.
But now you can accept a bottle of water if you come into a home.
There was an article we read in, I think it was my ethics class, and it was the Great Cafecito debate. And it was so funny because I think it happened at FABA, which is our, annual conference. And so it's interesting because I always thought that going into homes of people of Hispanic descent, I'm one of them. If you come into my house and I offer you, let's say a Cuban coffee and you decline it, or if I offer you a croissant or something and you decline it, For me, I don't care because I'm like, cool, more food for me. But in a normal household, that's disrespectful. Like I'm offering you a gift and it's like you're spitting back in my face. Yeah. So that was very difficult because when I started, I was told no gifts. My kiddo is of Mexican descent. So mom wanted to make me tacos and this and that. And for me, it was very difficult because I like tacos. But and you have
to. Yeah. And I was just going to say, too, as far as like you want to like build your we're getting so off of the topic on this, but it's a really important too.
The rapport. You got to build the rapport with the parents, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You got to build that rapport. And if you're like not accepting anything that they're kind of like offering, even if it's like a taco.
Yeah.
Right. Like you could probably eat a taco or have like a bottle of water and still have a professional relationship.
And professional boundaries, it's so crazy because you would think it's black and white. And I feel like with the no gifts, it's a very gray area. So we are getting off topic, but like it's tricky. And so I guess like the RBT, the best thing you could do is just refer to either if it's a small company, maybe ask the owner of the company or ask your direct supervisor and see their input.
Yeah, no, I think that's great too. It's just kind of, and then, you know, you can always kind of like check with the board too. Like if you have a specific question, it's an ethical dilemma, but the board does say like no gifts over $10. So now you can like kind of accept some of those things. Because before we weren't able to like accept like a bottle of water or anything like that because
yeah,
it has some kind of value. But now we can, you know, kind of accept that when we go into homes, if it's offered to us. Also, your supervision requirements. So really, for me, I don't know if other analysts ask different questions, but I kind of say, hey, so like, what percentage do you need? So, and for RBTs, it's 5%. So 5% of your hours need to be supervised. And then they'll ask you like kind of the clinical direction. So what direction do you want to see like with your supervision, like the company you work with, like what directions that you kind of want to see? You know, basically it's asking for your feedback too as a part of the competency assessment. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up today's episode, Erica.
Yep. I think that was a long one.
Yeah, it was a long one, but I think it's very important for listeners to by the way, I just want to say this was Erica's idea to go over the competency assessment. And I think it's really great because if you're thinking about becoming an RBT, hopefully this will take one less thing off your shoulders, right? So you can kind of get the breakdown of what kind of things that you're going to ask you when you have your competency assessment, either with your client, role playing, or just kind of an interview question. And hopefully it's a little less scary.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, hopefully everybody appreciated. I know it was long. You know, it's really helpful. And then if you're a current RBT, I think it's really important to freshen up on what's required because we get so used to what we do in programming every day that like definitions like sometimes throw you off. Like you do it in session, but some RB or some supervisors want you to role play, you know, different things or, you know, give a like an actual definition on what something is. And it's hard when you do the same programs every day. So just if you're new, this is good. If you need a renewal, it's good to just kind of play this a few times and hopefully.
I think those are important too.
Yeah.
So if you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and leave a review and don't hesitate to reach out with your thoughts and questions.
Yep, and keep striving for your excellence in your ABA practice. And until next time.
Bye.